Hello. That was, of course, me saying hello in the voice of Alan Rickman. It's 3:53 on Wednesday, the 27th of January, 2021, and you're listening for the very first time to The Blondie Show. Unless, of course, you've already listened to this episode and are now coming back to it. In any case, this is the very first episode of my podcast, so I suppose I ought to explain why it is that I'm doing one. There are many reasons why I'm doing a podcast, really, but one of the main ones is that I don't really like Instagram anymore. Or rather, I don't think that Instagram is the optimum medium through which to share the type of content that takes more than a few seconds to consume anymore. I will keep on using it for content like that, but the matters which I have more to say on than can easily be squeezed into a short video or a caption, I will be discussing on this podcast from now on. They won't always be global, pressing issues. I hope that not having to get straight to the point, as one has to on Instagram, will allow me to talk freely and slowly about all manner of things. I will also be answering questions and inviting other people onto the show, and I hope that they will do the same. As of this moment, I am officially open to suggestions as to who to have on, what to discuss, anything really. If you have any suggestions at all as to how to make this show worth listening to, please do share them with me by emailing them to jess@blondie.com. That's Jess with two S's at blondie with a Y.com. Jess is a real woman, unlike my first PA, and she will read your emails and pass them on to me. My first PA, Lisa, was not a real woman, as I just inferred. I don't mean to say that she was a disgrace to womankind, or that she was a man or a child pretending to be a woman, although technically she was all of those things. I mean that she did not exist at all. The story of Lisa's non-existence is this.
Do you have a vacancy for a back scrubber?
It was a dark, stormy night one day. I had just done my first solo art show, and I had all the pieces on a website with a little note under them that said something along the lines of, should you wish to purchase this piece, please email this email, and then my personal email. At the time, for some reason, there seemed to be as many people who felt compelled to tell me what a talentless banker with a capital W they thought I was, as there were people who had any interest at all in buying any art off me. I think that I have quite thick skin, but maybe I had less thick skin then, when I was 17. I had perhaps yet to grasp the fact that when you share something publicly, you invite people to criticize you as well as to praise you. And whether or not they are right to do so, they do have a right to. Anyway, I'm not ashamed to admit that I was rather hurt and a little bit perturbed by that influx of criticisms and threats. I thought that if the senders thought they might not be reaching me directly, they'd be less inclined to keep sending them. And I remember I was emailing a friend's assistant at the time, and her name was Lisa, and I remember thinking, what an appropriate name for an assistant Lisa is. So that's how it happened, really. 5 minutes later, lisa@blondie.com was born. And it really worked. Lisa proved useful in many more ways than just discouraging prospective hate mail senders from sending hate mail. She also became my first agent for about 2 years. Between 2015 and 2017, I answered countless emails in the character of Lisa, and I'd say things like, Blondie would love to do the job, but he just cannot commit for so low a fee, and he's going to need at least premium economy. Things like that. I was always being asked to do big jobs then, and the client almost always seemed to expect that I'd either be so humbled or so honoured to have been asked that I would do it for free, or that I'd be too shy to ask for any money, or that just because I was a skateboarder without an agent, I didn't really know how it worked. But I wasn't really without an agent anymore. I had an agent in Lisa, and she did know how it worked. and unlike other real-life agents, she didn't take a cut. She couldn't fire me or tell me what I should be doing with my life or with my career. I mean, really, besides taking inexplicably long to respond to emails, Lisa was in many ways an ideal agent. Anyway, the trusty PA and hard-driving bargainer that was me on my laptop in a wig and lipstick has long since been replaced by real-life Jess, who will pass your questions and suggestions on to me and dispose of any hateful emails, having had a quick giggle at them to herself in her own time. And by the way, if you do have more money than sense, I have a real-life agent now too at Kate Moss Agency. I'm not trying to name drop, that just is the name of the agency.
Airbrushed and parted, typical me, I started something, and now I'm not too sure.
Those were the dulcet tones of Freddie Samuels at St. Paul's Church in Knightsbridge, signalling the end of one segment and the start of another. In this segment, I will do my best to answer a question which, in some way or another, I am asked on an almost daily basis. That question is, how do I start a fashion brand? I think that for me to answer that question, I must first recount a brief history of Thames. When I was very young, I made art, as very many young people do. And perhaps unsurprisingly, as I grew up and became increasingly obsessed with skateboarding, the art I made became increasingly inspired by the type that was on skateboards. So the art that I was making when I was 12 or 13 was really a skateboard slash clothing brand waiting to happen. And it did happen, and it was a brand for, well, a very, very long time before I recognised it as such. I'm not sure exactly when that was, but I knew in 2015, when Palace Skateboards asked to invest in Thames, that it was a brand that I had been doing this whole time. And I think that I knew that with some investment and some work, it could well be quite a big one. So I agreed to them investing. Some paperwork was prepared and signed. And for about 4 years, Thames existed as a brand under Palace's wing. I would submit the type of artworks that you'd expect a teenage boy to make, and they would then oversee the process of those artworks being made into products, and those products then being pushed around the world. This was an arrangement which I was quite happy with when I was very young, but as I got older, I became increasingly more uncomfortable with my involvement, or lack thereof, in this company, which had always been, and would always be, my baby. I couldn't give Thames the effort and the time which it needed, because I didn't fundamentally agree with the way that it was being run. And I was also up to my eyes in other projects which, unlike my work with Thames or Palace, I could financially support myself through, and more importantly, I could have final say on. So for that reason, and 500,000 others, which are far too tedious to mention, I left Palace in April 2019 and set up a new company called Thames MMXX in capital letters the following October. Since then, I've run Thames exactly the way I think that it should be run. I make every single decision, be it financial or creative, on my own. And it can be very challenging, but I also find it to be incredibly rewarding work.
Does the body rule the mind, or does the mind rule the body? I don't know.
Now that I've explained how it took years and years for me to come to terms with the fact that Thames is predominantly a clothing company, it will perhaps come as less of a surprise to you that I don't think of it as a fashion brand, and I don't want it to be a fashion brand. The fashion world is one that I've really more fallen into than actively sought to be in. I have to say, I find it fundamentally quite repulsive. I don't find every aspect of the fashion world repulsive, of course. There are many aspects of it which I find quite magical. There are many people in it who I greatly admire, and many of their products, which I am very happy to own, but I find enough aspects of the fashion world repulsive to feel ashamed to be a part of it, or even to be seen as a part of it. Aspects like the coincidence that every single member of what a lot of these fashion types consider their family just so happen to be people who could further their careers, as opposed to, say, their friends from school or their actual family. Like the sheer hypocrisy of flying celebrities on private jets to Miami and then giving them a bottle of water to Instagram when they get there with a message printed down the side of it about how to save the planet. Like the women who never miss a £1 million party, of which there are about 15 a week, who never wear the same £2 grand dress twice and only ever take a break from chewing your ear off about how concerned they are for the 12 million children who are starving to death in Yemen to shove another lump of coke up their snouts. And I'm not suggesting that these people should feel ashamed of having a bit of money, or that they should make more of an effort to look and act like humble chimney sweeps, because I hate it when they do that too. For much the same reason, it's insincere. It's the underlying insincerity of the fashion world, and that its insincerity so grossly outweighs its magic that makes it very, very difficult for me to wholeheartedly recommend pursuing a career in it. But if you have your heart set on it, if my ranting did not deter you from doing so, then I wish you the very best of luck and can only implore you to break the mold by employing sincerity in all that you do. And that's actually as much a piece of business advice as it is a personal request. Because though people may not yet be bored or sick enough of those fashion houses that I was just slagging off for them to crumble and fall, they do realise just how wonderful it is to get behind someone or something authentic, and they will. As you can probably gather, I consider Thames to be about as authentic as a brand can possibly be. And I believe that what success it has garnered is almost entirely thanks to that. I have in the past gone about things in the more traditional way. I have placed adverts and lent clothes for shoots and given clothes to celebrities. Celebrities I like, of course, not just random famous people. I don't think that that's ever really harmed my brand, but there's very little evidence that suggests that it's ever helped it any more than, say, one of my newsletters has done. And they often bear no mention of product at all. One piece of advice that I can give you is that you ought to design for yourself, i.e. only make products that you yourself are excited to wear or use. And I would also advise you to steer clear of products that already exist in abundance. When I relaunched Thames, I relaunched it with quite a lot of t-shirts because I was totally convinced that I'd only be able to afford to make the other products which I was more excited about than the t-shirts, because I'd be selling so many t-shirts. This wasn't a total stab-in-the-dark theory of mine. While Thames was with Palace, t-shirts were really the only type of product to consistently turn a profit. And they seem to really work for other brands which Thames might be associated with, or the Thames customer might buy from. Palace, for example, I checked this before I started recording today, they currently have 165 different t-shirts on their website. And that's featuring about 25 different graphics. So if you do the maths, that's about 7 colourways of each and every graphic that they think is good enough to exist on one t-shirt. So they clearly work for them, but they don't really work quite as well for me. Interestingly, my jewellery and my cricket jumpers and my sunglasses outsell my t-shirts by a country mile. And I actually consider having the ability to cancel forthcoming orders of t-shirts because of the knock-on effects that the pandemic has had on the production line to be a real silver lining to it, for me. Another thing I feel I ought to mention is this. Despite my jewellery selling far better than I'd hoped it would, people do leave comments on pictures of it. Comments like, "Lol, what are you making this out of to charge that for it?" The answer is, of course, diamonds and gold. and the commenters are more often than not wearing Gucci logo t-shirts made out of cotton that cost the same amount or more than my gold diamond earrings do. The point I'm trying to illustrate by sharing this with you is that there are certain people in this world who you simply cannot please. My advice to you would be to not be disheartened by that, but to accept that and not waste a second of your time trying. Apart from all of that, I'd give you the same advice on how to run a brand as I would on how to live a life. Do your best, always put in the effort. Remember that self-pity is the ugliest emotion in humanity. And don't reprimand yourself too harshly when you make mistakes, because you will. You will make what feel to you like huge mistakes, and you may at times feel like you've wasted years of your life on certain mistakes. But I don't really believe that there's such a thing as a waste of time, or that a mistake is a mistake if you have learned from it. Remember, a gem cannot be polished without friction, nor a man perfected without trials. I think that it was Confucius who said that, but thinking about it now, it could well have been someone else. Earlier on, I shared with you one of the biggest lies I've ever told, being the existence of Lisa, my PA without a surname. And even earlier on, as in before I even started recording today, I asked you over Instagram to share some of your biggest lies with me. Lying is not something that I wish to encourage. All lies are bad, all lies are sad. But I think every single one of us would be lying if we were to say that we had never once told a lie. And the act of confession can serve not only to alleviate some of our stress or guilt, but also as a source of great entertainment for others. So, in the immortal words of the late, great Errol Brown, everyone's a winner. Without further ado, here's what you did last summer.
Who said I lied? Because I never. Who said I lied? Because I never.
1. I told my boss that I didn't sleep with his daughter just to keep my job. I assume that what this person means is that they told their boss that they didn't sleep with his daughter, full stop. Not that they told their boss that they did sleep with his daughter, but it wasn't just to keep their job, it was for some other or additional reason. Callum from Fife, if you're listening, please do get in touch and clarify. We'd love to know. 2. I lied when I wished my postman a Merry Christmas, and then in brackets, because he's a prick. I said only a minute or two ago that all lies are bad, and I'd actually quite like to retract that statement. Some lies are worse than others, and lies like wishing someone a Merry Christmas, I'm not sure whether they could even really be called lies. They're just common courtesy, aren't they? Like when someone says, "How do I look?" you just say, "Good." That's not really a lie, or if it is, it's not a bad lie. It's a good lie. It's a well-intentioned lie. Yeah. 3. That I never once told a lie in order to validate a lie I had just told. Interestingly, of the 791 confessions I received, 24 of them were to telling this exact all-encompassing lie. Now, I don't think that you have to be a psychological sleuth to know that excessive denial is a classic telltale sign of lying. So I suspect that this lie is far less commonly believed than it is told. In fact, I suspect that this lie is most often told by a liar who fears that they have already been rumbled in an attempt to soften the blow and make a joke of it. Anyone who is telling this lie and genuinely expecting to be believed is ambitious, to say the least. 4. That I was gutted when Fabric closed, when in truth, I'd never been. Ironically, if you had been, you might not have been quite so gutted to hear of its closing. I went to Fabric when I was a lad and quietly celebrated when I heard of its closing. And that was before I even quit drugs and alcohol. So make of that what you will. 5. Local MILFs in my area, that's in quotes, clicked, then it bricked my computer. And then the disappointed face emoji. Given the context, I think it's safe to assume that bricked means broke. This person seems to have somewhat misunderstood my request for a confession to a lie that they have told, and instead shared with me a lie that they have been told. They're referring, of course, to the gifs down the sides of porn websites that say things like, "Stop wanking now. There are horny MILFs within 25 metres of your front door, and they are just dying to fuck you," in red capital flashing letters. I have, perhaps naively, always assumed that there wasn't a single person on earth that had ever fallen for that lie and clicked on one of those gifs, but I suppose I was wrong. Ned from Putney has. 6. Finally pulled this guy I'd been infatuated with for months. I'd overindulged in the sauce that night. I woke up in the middle of the night, or rather early morn, and to my surprise, I was relieving myself in his bed. I managed to shuffle him over into the puddle of disgrace, dried myself off, and went back to sleep. It worked. I played it off as if I didn't care in the morning, so as not to embarrass him, and I even joked that I was into that type of thing, sexually speaking. 3 years later, and we're still hooking up, and he's still pissing on me. I feel it's gone too far to admit it's really not my jam. This confession is perhaps my favourite of all of them, because it's just so, so bizarre. The person who submitted its care for her partner's pride must have skyrocketed since that night for her to be in the position that she is now in. I have to say, I don't know many women who would have the audacity to act as she did, nor the resilience to pay the price for it for as long as she has done, let alone both. The midsection of that Venn diagram is surely a very, very sparse one. Anyway, I can only commend her and pray for her, and ask that you at home listening do the same. 7. When I was 10, I told my parents I came 5th in a cross-country race, when I actually came 205th. I like this one a lot. This is a classic exaggerative lie. I'm not sure whether exaggerative is a real word or not, but I think you know exactly what I mean by it. And I think that you, like me, can probably quite well imagine what this person was thinking when they told their parents this lie. To say that they came 200th or 105th would have not even really been worth lying about, but to say that they came 4th would have been quite unbelievable. 8. Said I had a disease to get with a girl. 9. Said I had gonorrhea to get a bird off me. It's interesting, isn't it, that those two lies are essentially one and the same, and yet they were told with polar opposite motives. I think so. And a nice one to finish off from Simon in Tottenham. That I was a good person. I wanted to believe I was, so I said I was. Luckily, I've changed. That's nice. Although, I've actually just noticed that it's unclear whether Simon has changed, and to say that he is a good person would no longer be lying, or that he has changed in that he has finally accepted that he just isn't a good person and has stopped lying even to himself about that. Let's hope it's the former. Those were some of the more amusing confessions. I hope you enjoyed hearing them as much as I enjoyed reading them. I feel compelled to mention that there were plenty of not-so-amusing ones too, and that sieving through them all made it painfully obvious to me how far we have yet to go before anyone and everyone in this world can unashamedly be themselves, no matter what their race, religion, sexual orientation or gender might be, without fear of being ostracized or worse. Our shared moral duty to expel blind prejudice from our societies in any way we can is one that we really ought to remind ourselves of daily until we learn to carry it out subconsciously and until it no longer needs carrying out. And on an entirely separate note, I won't mention any names, there'd be too many to mention anyway, but I'd like to thank every single young person who confessed to not really liking the music that they say they do. I cannot tell you how relieved I was to learn that. Well, that's all we've got time for today. If anything, we've slightly overrun. I say that, but it is, of course, my show, so I and I alone will decide when it's over. I've just decided, as I was just saying that it will be over in about 1 minute's time. If you're still listening, then thank you very much for listening. I hope that you will listen to episode 2. I don't know when that will be. I'd quite like to be talking to someone else next time and not just sat here on my own. I have no idea who that person might be, but I'm sure that they will be very, very interesting. And even if they're not, what else have you got to do? Honestly, go to a restaurant? I don't think so. It's lockdown, in case you hadn't noticed. Goodbye for now.